nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to Nationwide program on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Joseph Shadar. And today I'm having my discussion hour on a very important issue, one of the corner issues in the peace agreement, that is the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, which was signed on the 12th of September 2018. And, of course, there are a lot of issues that are mentioned in the agreement, but one of them is reform. And very important reform area is the reform of the judiciary. And it comes along also with the reform in the other governance institutions and other economic sector reforms and all that. So we will be looking today at the judiciary reform processes, progress, opportunities and challenges. And especially that the agreement speaks about, gives a specific article in the peace agreement, that is Article 1.17, and also all the sub-articles in this article there. They are speaking about the reform of the judiciary. And judiciary reforms, as I said, have been mandated by the revitalized agreement. And reform, of course, can carry a lot of meanings and interpretations. But the availability of clear goals and objectives makes each reform a unique experience. And so today I will have a member, the chair of the Judicial Reform Committee. This is one of the bodies that are formed for reforms in the country, but this one is specifically for the judicial reform. I welcome in the studio Justice James Ogola. And James Ogola is a former Chief Justice in Uganda, in neighboring Uganda, and he's here in this capacity as representing the international community or the regional community in this body, which is according also to the peace agreement. Welcome, Justice James Ogola, to Radio Miraya for the first time, of course. Welcome.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thank you, Justice, and we are also happy to have you here. And, of course, the judicial reform, as I said in the introduction, is based on the agreement. But let us have an idea, a clear idea for the listeners. How does it relate to the revitalized agreement, this issue of judicial reform?
Yes. Gabriel, 2018 is a watershed year for the people in the nation of South Sudan. In that year, that famous historic agreement was reached. And basically, we are saying in that agreement that the country has to stop conflict and move across, cross over to the other bank, which is peace, which brings justice, prosperity, liberty, and all that. That's a long haul. That's a long effort to do. But with it come a lot of things that will cross over the river. The politics of the country will cross the river and go from what we have and what we've been having for a long time to elections, as we understand them, in modern democratic entities. Crossing the river will be the executive arm of the state to implement the policies and the aspirations of the people of South Sudan. Crossing that river, that transition, will be the legislature, the legislative arm of the nation. But also there's another and equally important arm of the state, and that is the judicial branch of the state. That too needs to cross that river to the other bank. So in this transition effort that we have, we are making changes, good changes, changes that are beneficial to the future of this country. in all those three areas, not to mention the social and all the others. So the framers of the agreement had that in mind, and we of this committee are engaged in responsible for putting in place what it takes to change, to reform, to make more beneficial the judicial arm of the state. And that's what it, why it's called Judicial Reform Committee.
Now, the mandate itself and the reform itself might not be clear to the layperson. So what could be the elements involved in any reform that touches on the judiciary? We have a context of coming out of war, and this might be called transitional justice.
Yes.
But also we have another aspect which is purely institutional, so
yes,
that the judiciary is well equipped and can be really strong in carrying out the mandate of meeting out justice.
Yes. The motto of this country has got, if I get it right, words like liberty, words like prosperity, in the word called justice.
Yeah, that's true.
We are, as a judicial arm, engaged in all three. The judicial arm of any state is the arm where the citizens go as a last resort. When everything else has failed to work, when the executive has not quite gotten it right, when the legislature has not quite gotten it right, then the citizen who is aggrieved has a recourse, and that recourse is to go to the judiciary, the judges of the nation, and bring their grievance to that institution and say, I have been wronged, I would like my situation put right. Please, you as a judiciary, use your authority and your professionalism and your instruments to put right what went wrong. So when we talk of reform of the judiciary, we are basically talking about all the above. Reform it as an institution, its structure. We have a structure right now. You begin at the lowest courts in this country, very much so like the customary court system, and move all the way through the ranks to the regional, to the county, and then the regional, and ultimately to the Supreme Court of this land. Is that structure okay? That's what we are being asked. Take a good look at that, as a surgeon does with in the laboratory, and see if it's okay for the new circumstances of South Sudan. If it's not, then recommend adequate, appropriate changes. From that one, we look at the laws that govern this institution. We have the laws that set it up. Are they adequate? Are they up to date? Would we need to add something? Would we need to subtract something? Would we need to divide or to multiply, whatever, of the laws that govern the judiciary? Two laws in particular have been named in the agreement, but they're not restrictive. The two that have been named are the Judicial Act, the legislation that sets up the courts of South Sudan. And another one is the one which sets up the Judicial Service Commission. We look at those two and see if they are adequate for the new circumstances of South Sudan, but particularly so for a South Sudan post the transition, the new dispensation. Will these laws still be okay? There are other laws that are not named in the agreement specifically, but which we are allowed to take a look at, and the reform will include those. Beyond the laws, we'll be looking at the constitutional setup. For instance, the South Sudan state is now a federal entity. There's the central government in Juba, but there are 10 other states in three areas out there. Does the judiciary that was created before the setup of this federal setup, is that judiciary still okay? Is it still effective? Is it still efficient for the new circumstances? There is another area which you've been asked to look at more specifically, the feasibility of setting up an independent constitutional court for South Sudan. Many countries, many jurisdictions have independent constitutional courts separate from the usual classical judiciary, which is at the apex of which we have a Supreme Court. You got South Africa, for instance, got Nigeria, for instance. Outside the continent, you go to Germany. These are some of the well-established constitutional courts. We have been asked to take a look at that and see whether it's feasible to establish one for South Sudan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Justice James Ogola. When you are doing this process, as there are stakeholders that might be involved. Who are your stakeholders here? Who are your target groups that you will be engaging with in this process?
First and foremost are the people of South Sudan. These are the consumers. These are the customers of what goods we are going to produce. But beyond these people, there are those in their own groupings who started the idea, who are working with us, and to whom we will ultimately report our findings and our recommendations. And these are the five parties that are signatory to the peace agreement, revitalized mm-hmm. peace agreement. The Atotogno, SPLM, opposition, SOA, former detainees, other political parties, and IGAD. Each one of these stakeholders has been given the privilege of nominating and appointing representatives to this committee. Atotogno was given 5 slots, SPLM AI 2, SOA was given 1, former detainees 1, OPP 1. IGAD, and all those are nationals of South Sudan, mm-hmm. from the legal profession, have to have a legal background to be able to deal with the mandate of this committee. Many of them are former judges, many of them are lawyers, practicing lawyers, and so on and so forth. Then there are 2 who are brought in by IGAD. These 2 are a special group. 1 is the chair of the whole committee, and the other is the deputy chair. They are different from the other 10 members in the sense that they must not be nationals of South Sudan. They come from the region. They are eminent jurists who have time and the professional reserve of knowledge to lead and guide the national members. But above all, these 2 have no positions, so to speak. They don't belong to South Sudan. They don't belong to any of these parties. They don't subscribe to any of the philosophies of these parties. So they are independent, impartial people to lead and guide the committee in a professional way to the end of its mandate.
The time framework that is given to you, how long is this going to take?
For some reason, those who designed this whole thing gave a longer period to the bigger institutions of this transition. But when it came to the Judicial Review Committee, they thought of only 6 months. And they thought of an ad hoc committee sitting here for 6 months, doing its job, finalize, make its recommendations. We have found in practice that that was impossible to do, because we were appointed around May, June of this year. We were formally inaugurated, as established formally, on 27th of July, 2022. In the term of 6 months, would therefore be expiring in January next year, which is next month. Believe you me, Gabriel, we have done all we could, but all that we have been able to do is to set up the mechanisms, the in-house keeping things. We have, for instance, appointed our subcommittees to address different themes of our mandate. For instance, the structure. For instance, alternative ways of resolving disputes rather than litigation. For instance, one that will address the issues of Judicial Service Commission, a very important commission, because this is the one which appoints judges, mm-hmm. or makes recommendations who should be appointed a judge. It's the one which should help deploy them. It's the one which should help discipline them. If they become errant, someone has to begin the process of disciplining judges. And above all, it's the one that sets the terms and conditions of judges, the welfare of the judges. That's a whole subcommittee that we have put there to look into that issue and see if it's working or it's not working as well as it should. We have other areas, the Constitutional Court that I talked about. Mm-hmm. We have the training of judges. The manpower that is needed in the judiciary is not the, or rather the human resource, not manpower anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The human resource that is needed is not the kind that we now have from years back. The world has changed. COVID has been here. And the courts everywhere on this globe are no longer working the way they used to work. They now work with technology. And so training is a must for these judges. And also, if we should reform the system, it also calls for appropriate retraining and retooling human resource. Mm. So we have a subcommittee.
So that's quite a lot.
It's a lot.
Justice James Ogola.
It's a lot.
And the time framework is really, really short. It's really short. And you might recommend an extension or might request an extension based on the context and the situation now?
Before I answer that one, let me say this. What we've done in 4-5 months now is to set all those systems that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and many other things. The secretariat of this group, the work plan of this group, the rules of procedure of our committee. All these things have needed to be done, and we've done them in these 4-5 months. Mm. But now what remains is the real work of the committee, which is to understand what the status quo is. What courts are there? And where? Do they have buildings? Do they have the infrastructure? How many judges do we have? For instance, we've just learned that the Supreme Court should have like 9 judges plus. They have only about 6. They hardly have a quorum to do their work. Now, why is it that they have only 6? And other courts are even worse off than them. And we are beginning to find that it's because of the welfare. It doesn't exist. The judges have no cars, have no transport. they have to climb a public means of transport to go to their places of work. They have no housing. The salaries are meager, and they're not paid regularly on time. So, having looked at all that, we feel that the status quo needs a lot of fixing. Leave alone the bigger, more fundamental issues of what laws should apply, mm-hmm. the constitutional element of it, and all these other things. So, what we need to do now is to go out to the people of South Sudan and ask them their views. We plan to have public hearings. Bring them to like this radio, or bring your radio to wherever we'll be. And we call in people to ask them questions of how best do they see a reformed judiciary. And these people are first and foremost the judges themselves, those who are already in the system. Second, the lawyers who practice in the courts of law. Third, the lawyers who train this profession, academia. We have the people who use the courts, like the landowners all over the country. They must have views on how the courts have been handling the land disputes. And they must have their grievances. We have employers and employees, trade unions and so on. Are they aggrieved or not? What do they feel about the system as it is today? We have bankers. We have business people. How about them? What's their feel about this? We have chiefs. We have administrators in this country. Do they feel that the judiciary is a place they can trust, they can go to? How about legislators, members of parliament, in the central area and in the state legislators? How about the political leadership? How about religious leadership? How about the women? How about the youth?
The list goes on.
I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And yeah. Until we have reached those people and mm-hmm. they have reached us, we'll not feel comfortable with making theoretical recommendations. Yeah. These are the people who live with this judiciary. Mm-hmm. And so we need to reach them.
So let's say in this case, Justice James Ogola, the process is more important than the aim, right?
Absolutely.
You have to follow the process. You cannot jump to the goal without going through the process that will make it. And if you miss any of these very, very important sectors, the process will be questionable in the end.
Absolutely.
Now, another question.
And the legitimacy of it will not be there.
Yeah.
And the ownership mm-hmm. of what comes out of this.
Mm-hmm.
The people who own this, this system, mm-hmm. they need to have a say in it.
Yeah.
And I missed out one other group.
Mm-hmm.
And those, the South Sudanese who are not, for one reason or another, in South Sudan.
Yeah, in diaspora.
The diaspora, mm. the refugees, the displaced people, all these, and there are many. We understand there are two point something million,
yeah.
if not more.
Mm.
We need to reach them somehow.
This is just one article, but it's a huge work in the disagreement.
It is.
I don't know how long it will take, and the extension is only for 2 years. And then, I mean, we are left with few months to the end of this interim period, and then we will have to go to the extension.
But let me add, Gabriel, to put people's mind at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is not to do the final product.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is to find the facts,
yes.
analyze them, put them together, and then make recommendations as to what should be done. We will make these recommendations to the government. When that is done, the government can now take them on, either one by one or the whole thing, and take as much time as they need to put everything right. But still, ours needs to be done, and it cannot be done in 6 months or anything like that.
That is clear.
Yeah.
And also a question of principle, like the principle of reform itself. It differs in terms of actualizing the reform, the process of fact finding and recommending and then accepting and sequencing and all these.
Yes.
In your assessment of implementing reforms in a system that has already been functioning,
yes,
not even a failed system.
Precisely.
People say it takes years. It takes years to implement the reforms.
Is
that case expected in South Sudan so that we are not really selling them a lot of dreams that we can achieve this something, these huge reforms in just a very short of time?
You're absolutely right, Gabriel. Any state that has fracture goes back to the hospital. To fix that fracture takes any number of phases. Number one, you are taken into the trauma ward. They look at the bone. Is it broken up or down or sideways? They then fix it in a surgery. And then you will take time after they have fixed that one, it will take time for that bone to heal, depending on the age of the person, depending on the gravity of the fracture, depending on the circumstances that are found after it is fixed. It will take anywhere to a long time,
mm-hmm,
to fix.
And even
That's the biology of things. Here we are talking about a state. This biology, there's politics, there's economics, there's sociology. All those factors will come into the healing process. And the diversity of these issues in any given country is enormous. And the doctrine of how soon people change, it could take generations. In my own country, Uganda, we had fracture in 1970 thereabouts, the coup d'etat by Idi Amin, and the whole country was fractured. It has taken us up to today, many years after, mm-hmm, trying to heal, trying to put things right. So the people of Sudan, tighten your belts for the healing process.
And persevere.
Absolutely.
In the process. But they have to put it right, start in the right way.
Start with the right,
mm-hmm,
thing.
In the right way. So, so by the end of this process, Justice James Ogola, we will expect your recommendations to come out and it will be given to the peace partners.
Yes.
And hopefully before the end of the interim period.
Yes, we are looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking into the next 6+ months or so to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Listeners to Radio Mirai, this is me, Gabriel Sharad. This is the Nationwide Discussion Hour. And with me in the studio is Justice James Ogola, Chair of the Judicial Reform Committee, which is formed according to the Revitalized Agreement on the Resolution of Conflict in South Sudan. For those of you who would like to have an idea or would like to comment or ask questions to Justice James Ogola, the numbers are 091206-2950 and also 091206-2097. And the SMS line is 0912177141. Those are the numbers. The SMS line is 0912177141. You can send your SMS and I will read it to Justice James Ogola, or you can call the numbers that I have just said and revealed to the listeners. Now, the issue of judicial reform and understanding of justice, we seem in South Sudan here, or even in Africa, the judicial system, people seem to be arguing in the judicial system, rather like we have our own ways of looking at justice, understanding justice, and they think that this westernized institutionalism doesn't fit with our cultures. And we had a lot of debates here in which people say, shall we take this to the traditional court? Shall we take this to the institutionary court? And so forth and all. And all is coming up even with business issues and all this. And now we have cyber crimes and all this. So people seem to be at loss sometimes when it comes to the issue of understanding justice. Mm-hmm. So what sort of education, because you are going to people, but also it seems like the people themselves, they need a lot of education in the process.
You are absolutely right. And our idea of going to the people is A, to seek their views and their opinions, but in order to get to be fair to them, we put questions with a preamble. Because if I go to a village, I don't know where, and I say, what are your views on a constitutional court? Already the people in the area, most of them will say, but what on earth is a constitutional court?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
If I go in and say, okay, we would like the federal system of courts, they say, what is a federal?
Yeah.
And what is a system? So, in a way, we'll be going to do both. Mm. A little bit of training, a little bit of sensitizing, a little bit of seeking their views. Mm. The whole thing must be integral. It must be holistic.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. The debate is not only here in South Sudan. The debate is everywhere. Even the countries in Africa which are not like South Sudan, which have been around for some time. The debate is very fundamental about what kind of justice are we looking for? Restorative mm-hmm. or punitive?
Yeah.
Western brand of justice is about punishing the wrongdoer. Our African fundamental understanding of justice is not to punish the wrongdoer so much as to restore relations that were fractured. So ours is called restorative justice. The Western mode is called punitive. And that debate is ongoing. Another good example is the Western kind of justice is win all and lose all. Yes. You spend all your time and your effort and your money and your generational whatever wealth to go to court on a land dispute. Mm. And the Western mode says one of you will lose. And when they lose all. In fact, they don't lose 100%. They lose 110, if not 120, because there are costs that are added to the 100.
Yeah, it's higher.
Yeah. Ours, African, fundamentally, was let's talk about this. What's the problem? Can we resolve it? So these days we are purveying the idea of alternative dispute resolution methods. Like, can we solve this problem by ourselves without going to the courts? It's so costly. It's time consuming. At the end of it all, one will lose. And when you lose, you appeal. And then you begin the process afresh. And you go on and on and on and on. It could take a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these issues are germane, even here in South Sudan. And maybe in our reform effort, we'll be touching on some of them.
Of these issues.
And there's one unavoidable. And I think I talked about it immediately. You brought it in by way of cyber crime
yeah.
and so on. These are new things that are coming on the block, but also technology. Courts used to sit in a house, one room, bring those who are grieved, bring their witnesses, bring their lawyers, and we all sit in a place physical.
Mm.
With COVID and others of that nature, we no longer have that privilege.
Mm.
We now have to go to technology to meet virtually, to write judgments by technology,
mm.
to deliver them by technology, to receive evidence by technology. So all these are fundamental issues mm-hmm. that we have to...
Judge, because I'm not receiving callers on the line here, there is also other related institutions that are fundamentally or inherently linked to the good functioning of the judiciary system.
Yes, yes, yes.
Judiciary system, I understand, cannot function without the involvement, the strong support from these others. For example, the police.
Yeah, right.
So which bodies also do you think are very fundamental for an efficient judiciary system to function?
First and foremost is the institution of lawyers, the advocates. The Western system is confrontational. One party comes with a grievance. The other party has to defend itself. But the laws governing these things, most of the time, 90% of the time, require experts in the law to speak for these different parties. So advocates, the bar, the lawyers, are an essential element of the judicial system.
And if they are not good, then we have a problem.
If they're not good, we have a problem. If they're not there, we have a problem. If they're not properly trained, we have a problem. If they are not disciplined,
or ethical even,
for ethical conduct, we have a problem. So the judiciary, working with these people, has to make sure.
That is one group already.
That's one group already. Prisons. When we've had our day in court and we find somebody guilty, it's normal to either punish them by fine, mandatory fine, or to put them in a place where they are safe from society and society is safe from them. We call that prison. So the prison or reformative system is one other group. I have used the word reformative. Sometimes the emphasis is put on prison, punishment of the guilty person. Other times, it's better to talk of reform. Take this person in there so they can reform and make the system of prisons a reformatory system. The other group is prosecutions. These are, again, a class of lawyers whose duty is to represent the state, to put malcontents in the state, those who disturb the stability of the state, those who commit crimes, they have to be prosecuted by
the
state and by the lawyers of the state called prosecutors. Equally, the police come in not only to arrest the bad people in society, the antisocial people, but to investigate their wrongdoing. They are the only group that has the mandate and the ability and the tools to go to look for those who are suspects of crime. Did they actually commit the crime? That's investigations. It's from those investigations that you bring the matter to the court to say, are you guilty or not guilty?
Those
are groups that must work with.
Very interesting, Justice James Ogola. My last question here is also the debate around whether judiciary should be independent or not, because it is in principle it says that this is the third wing of the government or something like, or the second wing, but there are a lot of issues about the independence in the context of Africa and even maybe South Sudan here, whether judiciary can really be independent practically.
The first thing you talk about before you come to the independence of judiciary is the separation, is a philosophy called separation of powers. Modern states are designed to have three major branches. The legislature, which makes the law on behalf of the people. The people send their representatives there to organize their affairs through making laws. So legislature is the organ that is mandated with legislation, creation of legislation in society. The executive is the branch that implements those laws and those wishes of the people. Executive, headed by president, cabinet, and so on, are the ones who do that one. Now, as I said before, what happens if things go wrong? Then the citizen should have recourse to another arm of state where he or she can expect independent, impartial, professional this resolution of his issue. And that is the judiciary. And for that judiciary to work properly without giving sides, without being impartial, without being forced to do one thing or the other, there is a concept of independence of the judiciary. When deciding cases, the judge must not be influenced by anybody, whatever authority, whether it's the president of the country, whether it's the chief justice of the country, cannot walk into a judge's room and say, that case decided this way or that way. Because if you do, then there's no justice anymore. It is power, it's authority. There's another element of independence of judiciary, the financial one. Does the judiciary have the adequate resources to do its job without its hand being stayed? And many executives don't go directly and tell the judge what to do. They would reduce the financing of the judiciary. Then nothing happens. The other one is the institutional independence of the judiciary. As an institution, can it stand on its own feet? The ideal is to have that independence. In practice, that independence is eroded all the time, and that's a pity.
Since Justice James Ogola for this, and last question is whether the element of trust is very important to the issue of people trusting the judiciary system, because you might have here the issue of people taking the law into their hands.
It might be
there as an underlying reason.
You're absolutely right, Gabriel. Trust is the thermometer, the barometer by which any judiciary is weighed in any society. If there's no trust, then you can bid bye-bye to the judiciary. And if you do, then everybody in that country suffers. Because then the people are left with no option, no recourse, but to go to their own devices. And those who are powerful will say power, might is right.
Might is right.
And those who are weak will forever be trampled upon. And that's not a society to go to. Particularly so in a country like South Sudan, which has been there before and is trying to cross that river to a more useful, a more palatable state.
I have learned a lot of things today, and I hope the listeners also have learned a lot today. And what is the hope for your committee?
We have a motto in our committee. We designed one. We said justice for all. And we put as our stamp, our imprimatur, we put the scales of justice, we inscribed them inside the geographical map of South Sudan. And by that, we send a message that this committee is serious about reforming the judiciary of South Sudan to the point when we can all be very proud of the product, which is justice for all. And because we need the trust of the people and the ownership of the people for this product, we are therefore bending back over backwards to get the people of South Sudan to have their say in the new product that is in the on the conveyor belt.
Justice James Ogola, I could be listening to you the whole day. Thank you very much for coming on our radio station, Radio Miraya, and I hope the listeners outside there, they have learned a lot, and maybe we'll have you again and again in the course of your noble work you are doing, so that this issue of justice will really be settled, at least starting to do something in this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you indeed.
And that is the end of today's discussion hour on Nationwide on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadar. Thanks for listening.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.